Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, after making some last-minute changes, the legislators in the Ohio House have advanced their version of the state budget. Representative Ty Matthews shares his thoughts on the $61 billion 4,000-page bill. Also this morning, our Throwback Thursday, the federal Real ID deadline is less than a month away. For those who don't yet have the more secure driver's license and identification card, a reminder about how it works and why it's important. And my wife Kyra isn't the only one in the kitchen. We have bonus recipes this morning for delicious desserts and sweet treats for every kind of gathering or entertaining occasion this spring. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Thursday, April 10th, 2025. The Library of Congress has announced the latest additions to the National Recording Registry. Now, in case you don't know how this works, every year, 25 different audio recordings that are at least 10 years old are selected to be marked for preservation based on their cultural, historical, or aesthetic importance in the nation's recorded sound heritage, is according to the Library of Congress. That is the mission of the National Recording Registry. They've been doing this for many, many years, and this year's picks include the 1973 album Goodbye Yellow Brick Road by Elton John, the album Back to Black by Amy Winehouse, the late Amy Winehouse. That was a great album. Also entering the, of course, Amy Winehouse is British, so it doesn't, the National Recording Registry doesn't necessarily have to be recordings that were originated in this country, but recordings that are important to people in this country. And that Amy Winehouse album is a huge hit in the U.S., let's see here. Also entering the National Registry this year are Happy Trails by Roy Rogers. Happy trails to you. The Roy Rogers version, not the Van Halen version. Van Halen did that, didn't they? Happy Trails. Also the Broadway cast album of Hamilton added to the National Recording Registry. I didn't realize that Hamilton was 10 years old. I mean, how time flies. And I thought this was maybe the most interesting addition to the National Recording Registry this year, the original Microsoft Windows 95 startup sound, the reboot theme. You remember that? You know which one I'm talking about here? Yeah, that you heard every time you rebooted your computer, the original Windows 95 sound is now in the National Recording Registry for its cultural, historical, or aesthetic importance in the nation's heritage of recorded sound. It's hard to argue with that. Hard to argue with that based on those criteria. Let's see. Elsewhere among the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, the first things you need to know this morning. Speaking of music, researchers at The Ohio State University have found that when background music does not match the mood of employees, productivity at work tanks. Do you have background music on where you work? If the music doesn't match the mood of the employees, then productivity goes way down. This is true even if the music playlist is upbeat. For example, a cashier working a busy register may prefer slow music to keep calm, but the store manager might think the customers need a heavy beat to keep them shopping. And that music mismatch is linked to more employees slacking off and breaking the little rules at work. However, this effect, they say, this research out of Ohio State, this effect, they say, can be combated by letting employees choose the music or by offering silent areas for breaks, just to give them a little respite from the music that does not match their mood. It says here about 13.5 million Americans work in jobs where background music is constant. So that's, if you are in one of those workplaces, something you might want to consider. It was interesting. Did you hear about this? AEP Ohio. This is big news. You want to know this? AEP Ohio has announced a rate increase for the summer. Yay! The electricity provider says customers will likely be paying about 2 cents more per kilowatt hour beginning in June. AEP Ohio. Finance official with the utility says the increase is tied to higher demand for power generation, which is, of course, something that is not under the control of AEP or any other electric company or power provider either. AEP Ohio spokesperson says the average monthly bill in the state will probably go up by about $27. Woo, $27. So be prepared to pay more to cool your home this summer. So this is kind of an interesting story in the sense that we've been talking about returning human beings to the moon. We've been talking about exploring even further into space, maybe going to Mars. It is amazing all of the different things, all of the different considerations that we have to take into account that you wouldn't think of. And thank goodness there are scientists who are working on this, although I'm not sure that I would want to be one of the scientists assigned to this part of the project. Due to space exploration, I did not know this, but there are 96 bags of human waste on the moon right now because of all of the lunar landings that we have done in the past. Apollo astronauts left these bags of human waste. They had to leave them behind to lighten their spacecraft. You don't want to take that stuff home with you. And so they just left it there on the moon. But now NASA is looking for another solution and they are opening it up to the general public. Apparently they don't have any real good ideas about this. But if you've got an idea, they are willing to pay up to $3 million. NASA will be reviewing applicants of the Luna Recycle Challenge to see who can come up with the best way to recycle human waste on the moon. NASA spokesperson says they are committed to sustainable space exploration. The quote here, as we prepare for future human space missions, we will need to consider how to minimize various waste streams, including solid waste. And again, this is something it is. If you think about it, this is important. And I mean, it's not something that you want to forget about when you get to the moon and then figure out, oh, now what do we do with this stuff? You know, you would hope that somebody would have come up with an idea before we actually get there. So these are the things you have to worry about, all these little details, although this is not really all that little, I suppose. NASA will soon select the most promising entries to develop functional prototypes. So if you have any bright ideas, that's what to do with our poo, then reach out to NASA because they are open to ideas. Wow. And finally here, among the first things you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. You remember yesterday we were talking about all of the unusual things that have been left behind in Ubers. Uber out with their annual list of the craziest, most unusual things that were left behind that Uber drivers have found in their vehicles. Well, now a company called Unclaimed Baggage, they are in Scottsboro, Alabama, and they get all of the unclaimed baggage or lost things that are lost at airports. They buy it up and they resell it at their store in Alabama. And they are out with their list of some of the weirdest items that have been left behind at the airport. The world of lost luggage is full of stories to ponder and surprises to behold, according to CEO Brian Owens. Some of the more unusual abandoned objects of the past year include a freeze-dried chicken foot, someone's glass eye, which that is something you would think that you would notice you were missing. A French guide to performing exorcisms. A bedazzling kit for one's teeth. A teeth bedazzling kit. A full sheet of uncut $2 bills, which actually is kind of cool. Let's see here. The most expensive unclaimed item was a diamond ring valued at $39,000. 39 grand. Again, if that would be something that I would want to keep very close. You know, if I had lost a $39,000 diamond ring, I think I'd notice it, but it went unclaimed. Next time you are leaving the airport, make sure that you have all of your possessions is the moral of that story, to be sure. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Thursday morning started here.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Showers possible today with a high around 50, a chance of rain tonight, a low around 40. The Ohio Department of Transportation says one of its crew members came within inches of being hit by a vehicle on Interstate 75 near the Hancock-Allen County line. ODOT says a car veered off course and took out an ODOT truck mirror, and the ODOT crew member pressed themselves against the ODOT truck just in time to avoid being struck. ODOT says, think about it, if the mirrors collided, how much space was left for the person in between? ODOT Press Secretary Matt Bruning is pleading with drivers to pay better attention on the roadways.
The key message here is, you know, these are men and women who have families at home they want to go home to every day at the end of their work day, just like all of us do. All they ask while they work to keep you safe on the road is that you keep them safe by paying attention when they're out there.
See some pictures from the scene and this story on our website. State lawmakers are proposing legislation that could impact Ohio's professional sports teams.
The Public Access to Professional Sports Act would block teams from getting public money if they don't win at least three out of their last five seasons. And if they take the cash and move out of town, they'll have to pay it back. The lawmaker behind the bill says fans are tired of being held hostage by team owners threatening to leave unless taxpayers foot the bill. Right now, the Browns are seeking public funding to build a new stadium in Brook Park, which is a suburb of Cleveland.
ONN's Tracy Townsend reporting. The city of Findlay will be offering a bulk trash drop-off for Findlay residents from Saturday, April 19th to Saturday, April 26th, sponsored by the Findlay-Hancock County Community Foundation. Dumpsters will be placed at the Public Works Department at 330 North Corey Street, where city residents will be able to dispose of unwanted debris. The drop-off will be held in conjunction with Earth Day on Tuesday, April 22nd, and the Backyard Mission Trip taking place on Saturday, April 26th. Proof of residency in the city of Findlay and or ID will be required. Get more details in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
So the big story at the statewide level this morning, after making some last-minute changes, legislators in the Ohio House have advanced their version of the state budget. Representative Ty Matthews is with us to share his thoughts this morning on the $61 billion 4,000-page bill. So I'll start with just kind of a basic question, ask for your general thoughts on the bill, any concerns or issues that you have about what's in it or what's not.
Well, thanks for having me on, Chris, and good morning. It was a great experience overall going through this process. And first, I just want to make it clear to everyone that this is not the final product. This is what we passed in the House.
Right.
So it's going over to the Senate now. So there could be changes to what we even talk about today. So this is what our House version is. talking about some concerns or, you know, where I think the bill is, I think it's a great budget bill. If I'm remembering correctly, this is the closest we've been in the last two decades in producing a flat budget, which means a flat budget is you're not increasing it from the last biennium.
Right.
So we got really close to that. So there was a lot of good cuts, and I believe a lot of surgical cuts, not necessarily taking a machete and irresponsibly doing things. But I think we are in a very, very good spot right now to send it over to the Senate.
So the main point, we mentioned some last-minute changes, that was primarily with respect to library funding, which there were a lot of concerns among library interests in the state of Ohio about cuts in the budget at the state level, piggybacked with expected federal cuts. And I know they lobbied very, very hard to change the funding that they were getting for libraries, the set aside for libraries in the state.
Yes. And if you don't mind, I'll like to kind of walk through, I think, where I see the issues that arose on both sides on this. First and foremost, here in the 83rd district, we have great libraries. You know, we're very blessed with great schools and great libraries up here. But, you know, from the legislature's standpoint, I think we are seeing some mixed messaging. So just want to kind of go down through some some facts that we see as a state legislature according to the current library funding model and what we're pursuing. First of all, Ohio, we are only one of two states that funds our libraries in this way with a percentage from the GRF. So the new formula that they presented is in good intentions of providing a more stable way of predicting dollars. And what I mean by that, Chris, is the PFL distribution from estimates from the fiscal year 24. When we passed the budget, it was around $505 million, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you take into the considerations of how the revenues went that year, the actual amount ended up being $489 million that actually went out the door. So if that makes sense, we passed the budget, then it's based off the percentage of the GRF, which is the state revenues at the end of the year.
Right.
That then gets pushed out, right? So it's estimated in 24 when they passed the budget that there'd be $505 million going to libraries. Well, ended up only being $489. What the state legislature's done, we have passed it where it'd be a kind of like a line item where
a fixed
here, this
amount
is the guaranteed funding you are going to be receiving rather than having kind of a guesstimate, right? So currently, I do not see a cut in public library funding. Just to show you our numbers, in fiscal year 24, again, the actual amount that went out the door is $489 million. Fiscal year 26, we're going to see it's going to be $490 million. And in fiscal year 27, $500 million compared to fiscal year 25, which was only $493. So that's a total of about $7.2 million of a increase compared to the last biennium budget, right? So I am seeing an increase in funding. The issue that we're going to have to talk about going forward is bringing the stakeholders in around the table and how are we going to properly fund libraries going forward. The issues that may, unintended consequences of making it a line item, whether that's a great move or not, I'm definitely open to suggestions on that.
Mm-hmm. The other, you mentioned schools, and school funding was another point of contention, as it always is. That is not necessarily new when it comes to the state budget. But public schools are not happy with this state budget passed in the House. They feel that they have been shortchanged based on what was promised under the new funding formula that was implemented couple of cycles ago, especially, they say, given the fact that private school funding got a big increase. What is your response to that charge?
Yeah, I think what we're looking at is turning out to be a funding formula issue when we're trying to address property tax relief. While property taxes are one of the main sources of schools to raise their money, right? So recognizing that, the House created a bridge formula for the next 2 years that would take into account property tax valuations, which would have otherwise decreased the share going to the districts. That provides more eight districts that are seeing an increase in enrollment. So the current numbers that we have, just going to run through them really fast here. And I know numbers, when we talk about numbers, it's kind of boring really fast. So I'll try to be brief here. But in fiscal year 2026, we're seeing an increase of $207 million to public schools, and then an increase of $346 million in fiscal year 20 compared to fiscal year 2025. So again, we're seeing an increase of $505 million to state public schools in the biennium compared to the last biennium. So we're still seeing an increase. Again, my issue that I see arising is going back to the formula, right? How are we going to create a formula going forward that is going to be stable and give public schools some more assurity of where their funds are going to come from? And, you know, part of that too, Chris, is going to property taxes.
Right.
One of the issues that I believe, sorry, go ahead, Chris.
No, I was going to say, and maybe I'm jumping into where you're going with this, but property tax reduction, the reduction of property tax has been a big point of emphasis for legislators, but at the same time, included as it relates to school funding, included is a provision that would reduce the amount of property taxes going to the schools once they reach a certain threshold of carryover money in their budget. And some would say it does seem as though that is almost penalizing schools for fiscal responsibility, that if they don't spend enough of their budget or spend enough of their money, they're going to get less of it.
Yeah, and that's exactly where I was going. So this is where we're currently at in the budget. You know, we're going to require each budget commission to identify when a local school carries over 30% of their annual budget. So that in 24, just to give you a number of how many schools actually were 30% over their annual budget, it's 486. So there's two different thoughts behind that, right? Is one, you're receiving state tax dollars. You should be spending this on the student within that year. That is what we are allocating you for in this biennium. The other part of that, though, it comes into you're punishing us for being fiscally responsible, is I believe that a lot of these schools are saving up for potential building projects, right? What I'm looking at right now is how do we lower a lot of these mandates on these schools for these building projects that would help lower the cost, right? I think there's a lot of mandates when we're talking public to private schools of, you know, a lot of the complaints from the public schools are, there's really no mandates on the private schools. You know, we have all these mandates, and mm-hmm. I think this conversation goes to, well, let's raise the mandates on the private schools. You know, my response is, how about we lower mandates on the public schools? You know, I'm typically a smaller government guy, you know, and right now part of that DOGE caucus I'm part of is we're looking at different mandates that are unfunded, that are putting undue burdens on schools, on hospitals, or whatever industry it may be to help, you know, alleviate that. But it is at that 30% threshold for the schools on that carryover.
We will, and obviously this is an area of great concern, school funding here locally, for obvious reasons in the city of Findlay, especially right now. So obviously that is very much, people are very cognizant of that here locally. I'm going to have to end it there. Some of the key points of the Ohio House budget that was passed yesterday, as you accurately point out, a lot of this can change because it has to go to the Senate yet and then be reconciled between the two versions before it gets to the governor's desk. But I'm sure we will talk more about it as the process plays itself out. Representative Ty Matthews, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. And we just scratched the top of it.
Absolutely. And now our Throwback Thursday this morning. The federal Real ID deadline is now less than a month away. If you don't have one yet, you won't be able to board a commercial flight or enter some federal buildings after May 7th. This is important because vacation season is coming up. So if you're planning to travel, if you're going to, you know, if you've had a flight scheduled, you won't be able to board a plane without this Real ID. Unless you have other documentation like a passport, even for domestic travel. This next generation driver's license and identification card has actually been available for 7 years now. The deadline has been pushed back many, many times. But still, only about half of Ohioans have one. So obviously, there are still people who don't know why it is so important and or understand the enhanced security procedures that are necessary to get a real ID. Back when the program was first announced, we spoke with then Ohio BMV State Registrar Don Pettit, who currently serves as a deputy director in the state attorney general's office. But at that time, he was the BMV. Don Pettit told us about the changes to provide greater fraud and identity protection from March of 2018. It is today's Throwback Thursday. It is about greater fraud and identity protection, correct?
That is correct. The real benefit is the ability to kind of embed into this new card some significant security features that will make it tamper-resistant, counterfeit-resistant. So it's all about doing a better job of trying to shore up the overall quality across the board of what they will accept as proof of identity for federal purposes, you know, such as getting through TSA or into a nuclear plant, for example, certain standards. You know, more security about who has access to the information, who has access to the materials, you know, so it's really all very, you know, security oriented, helping to better establish, you know, that who, you know, who the customer says they are, they really are, and that somebody else isn't able to make use of their identifiable information.
A greater degree of certainty that the person who has the ID card is the individual named on the card. And this doesn't just apply to Ohio. This is nationwide.
Correct. Standards that any state who wants their driver's license to be accepted, you know, by the federal government for identification purposes.
Now, to get this new compliant card, that will require some additional documentation that people will need to bring with them when they renew their license. That may be the most important change that people will want to know procedurally.
Yes, absolutely. The you know, the reality is that you know, for our existing customers, you know, unfortunately, we're going to have to kind of make them prove or re-verify some information that they've provided before. I mean, we've seen your birth certificate before, but it may not have been, you know, since 1984 when you were originally issued a license. So, you know, the federal requirements do include kind of revalidating, you know, the customer's full name, date of birth, social security number, two proofs of residence address in order to get that compliant card. Now, the one thing that I will point out, though, is that we are giving customers a choice as to whether or not they want to get that federally compliant card and bring those documents back in, or for, if you're an existing customer and, you know, you don't fly, you don't feel like you're going to need to worry about it, you'd be able to renew for what we're calling a standard card. You know, ultimately, the standard card functions the same as a regular driver's license does now. Just, you know, the question for each customer would be whether or not they want to show additional documents to us to get that federally compliant card, or if they have to travel, if they would want to show TSA extra documents if they have the standard card.
Yeah, so without the documentation, without the federally compliant card, you won't be able to use simply your driver's license to board an airplane, show ID at a military installation, you know, anything of that nature. The other significant change in the whole process is that individuals will no longer get their new license at the local BMV office. It will come in the mail. Why?
Better accommodating federal requirements for the security built in around the printing equipment. You know, it's a lot easier to outfit one localized, centralized print factory with the high-level security than it would be for us to try to create that kind of secure environment in 180-plus locations across the state.
Folks will get an interim license for the benefit of those like me that generally wait until, like, the last day. So, that's good to know as well. And by the way, the cost will not change, but will this be more expensive for the BMV to comply with these new regulations, mail all of these licenses and ID cards and so on moving forward?
The customer won't pay anything different, but we're going to end up paying about 30 some cents more per card for the production,
so,
and then also the cost of mailing.
Yeah, just kind of an interesting sidebar in the on the whole thing. Now, there is a sample of the card and all of the information as to what documents people will need to bring to get a compliant card. All of that is on your website, correct?
Yes, it is. We've got some helpful links there, including if you're looking for the compliant card, especially an interactive documents list that kind of walks you through, you know, you can click on which documents you have and it'll tell you whether or not you have all that you need.
Mm-hmm.
You're even able to print off that list as kind of a guideline and take it with you to, again, help customers be better prepared for a smooth transition and a good customer experience.
Again, from March of 2018, our conversation with then Ohio BMV State Registrar Don Pettit about the Real ID program. Again, that federal deadline for the Real ID less than a month away, and it will kick in before summer vacation, spring and summer vacation season. So if you are planning a flight, only about 55% of Ohioans have the compliant Real ID in their wallet now. So if you need it, there is still time, but time is running out for you to get that before the vacation season kicks in with that deadline looming. It's been pushed back many, many times, but it is they're finally serious about this. They're not going to let you board plane if you don't have the Real ID. By the way, a couple of notes on that with the documentation that you will have to provide, that you'll be required to provide to get the Real ID. Number one, I know from personal experience, take more than you need, because for one reason or another, they might reject something that you present as documentation. So having more than you need is a good idea, so you don't have to make a second trip to the BMV. And also be aware they're not going to keep that documentation. They're not going to hold your birth certificate. They just need to see it and verify it. And then you can take that back with you, back home with you. But if you want to learn more, we've got a link on our webpage. Go to goodmornings.net for all of the information. Today's Throwback Thursday.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
A Minnesota woman has pleaded guilty to a felony charge of receiving stolen property and now faces up to 5 years in prison. Vanessa Guerra was arrested by police after an investigation. They determined that she had stolen a vehicle. She was forced to admit to the crime after detectives uncovered an entry in her diary in which she wrote, quote, "Totally stole a car today." She put it in her diary. "Totally stole a car today." The vehicle she was charged with stealing is a 2004 Ford Freestar van, minivan. I mean, come on, if you're going to steal a car, are you really going to steal a 2004 minivan? Of all things. On the same day, the car's owner reported the vehicle missing. Ms. Guerra wrote the incriminating journal entry, adding that she was super freaking out about it. "Totally stole a car today and super freaking out about it." She's probably freaking out about it even more, knowing that she faces up to 5 years in prison for receiving stolen property and auto theft. Elsewhere in the broken news, police in Hampton, Virginia are looking for a pair of thieves that reportedly stole merchandise from a Bath and Body Works store. Police say two women stole items, mostly candles, you know, little scented candles from Bath and Body Works. They are lovely. But they stole $1,300 worth of candles from the Bath and Body Works, which is what, five or six of them, I think. They're a little pricey. The pair were last seen fleeing the scene in a white Hyundai four-door with a New York license plate. Police are asking for the public to contact them if they have any information on the suspects. So if somebody comes up to you on the street, say, hey, want to buy a scented candle? I got scented candles here, going cheap. they might be hot candles in more ways than one. Did you hear about this story? It was in the news. Passengers on a flight from New York City to Milan, Italy, the plane had to turn itself around. Can you imagine? An hour into the flight or something, the plane had to turn around, and all of the passengers who were hoping to see the sights of Italy just ended up back where they started, at least temporarily. According to a statement from American Airlines, which was operating the flight, the plane turned around mid-journey to return to JFK Airport in New York due to a disruptive passenger. The disruption reportedly began when the passenger did not receive the in-flight meal that they had ordered. Well, that's certainly a reason to sabotage a flight. You can get an in-flight meal that they had ordered. So they made a disturbance to the point where the plane had to turn around. Apparently, the individual or the couple in question were also upset that they were denied a seat in an exit row, which, of course, has added legroom, because they were traveling with a baby. You're traveling with a small child. You can't sit in an exit row. That's the rule. And it's not just an American Airlines rule. That is a rule. You can't be in an exit row if you've got a small child. But they were upset. Flight eventually, after they got back to New York and the disruptive passengers were passenger or passengers, I'm not sure whether it was a single individual or a couple. But anyway, they were removed from the plane and the flight eventually departed toward Milan again. The kicker on this story is that American Airlines, as compensation to all of the other passengers on the flight. Now, mind you, all of this started when the passenger in question did not receive the in-flight meal that they had ordered. So, to make up for the disruption to the rest of the passengers, American Airlines provided the other people on the flight with meal vouchers. They provided the meal vouchers to make up for the inconvenience. That's like adding insult to injury, isn't it? You know? Got the passenger arrested because they couldn't get their meal, but they gave free meals to everyone else. I love it. That's a little petty, but I love it. This is big news. I don't know if you heard about this. A Kentucky Fried Chicken-inspired toothpaste has already sold out. You heard that correctly. A Kentucky Fried Chicken-inspired toothpaste. KFC teamed with an Australian oral care brand to create a fried chicken-flavored toothpaste that the fast food chain described as a craveable toothpaste that delivers next-level freshness with every brush. A fried chicken-flavored toothpaste. It sold for $13, and if you're interested, forget about it, because it is already sold out. A KFC-themed electric toothbrush also is sold out. The company in question, by the way, who produced this monstrosity, is known for offering unique toothpaste flavors, including gingerbread and glazed donut. That's what they're famous for. So I'm not sure that I would want to try any of those. Gingerbread, glazed donut, and now fried chicken, Kentucky Fried Chicken. Toothpaste. All right. And finally, in the broken news this morning, this is how you know you're having a bad day. This is how you know you're having a bad day when you wake up to find that your entire life has been a lie. A man living on Long Island in New York has discovered that he was accidentally switched at birth with another baby 65 years ago. Kevin McMahon was given to the wrong family when he was born in 1960, swapped out with a baby of the parents of Ross McMahon. The hospital, or the lawyer for Kevin McMahon, who is representing him and suing the hospital, says they were two Caucasian mothers with the same last name in their 30s, about the same age, that both gave birth to baby boys at the same hospital on the same day within 2 hours of each other. So, to a certain extent, the mix-up is understandable, but the fact that nobody caught it until 65 years later, and how did they end up, how did the mix-up come to light? Well, it was discovered after Kevin's sister took a DNA test, which told her that she had an unknown biological brother. For Kevin, the discovery validated a lifetime of feeling like something was off. He said he didn't look like his siblings. His brothers and sisters always joked that he was the mailman's kid growing up. As it turns out, no, he was some other couple's kid, some other McMahon's kid. The hospital has declined to comment in the case, as you might imagine. Wow, that's a bad day. Or maybe a good day, I guess, to finally figure it out. You finally have an answer, but wow. How would that upend your life? There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Findlay Rotary, where local professional leaders come together to make a difference.
I'm Chris Webb, market executive for State Bank and Trust Company and lifelong resident of Findlay Hancock County. Being a Rotarian has blessed me with the opportunity to work hand-in-hand with fellow community leaders to carry on a more than 100-year legacy of service locally and internationally. I am proud and humbled to be a member of Findlay Noon Rotary Club.
Why not join Chris and so many others to advance the Rotary mission of service above self? To learn more, go to findlayrotary.org.
This message provided by WFIN.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Not a whole lot of numbers and statistics actually here, but it is really, really interesting research. Have you ever complained that your washing machine doesn't last as long as like your parents' washing machine did, right? If so, you are not alone. Many people do believe that modern appliances are designed to fail prematurely. They have a term for it, planned obsolescence, that belief that manufacturers deliberately make products that won't last. But is this actually true? A recent study out of Norway challenges this commonly held belief. They looked at data spanning decades, and what they found was that most household appliances have not actually gotten less durable over time. The research was published in the Journal of Industrial Ecology. They found that now washing machine lifespans did decrease pretty substantially from about 19 years. Washing machines used to last about 19 years, and now they last less than 11 years. So that is a 45% reduction in longevity. Oven lifespans showed a similar trend, shortening from nearly 24 years of durability to around 14 years. That is a 39% decrease. But other appliances that they studied, like refrigerators, freezers, clothes dryers, dishwashers, those showed no significant lifetime changes over the decades. And even though washing machines and ovens don't last as long, they say changing usage patterns may actually be to blame more so than planned obsolescence. Families years ago would run approximately 2 washing cycles in 1960, but by the year 2000, they were running 8 cycles per week. And since washing machine durability usually relates to the number of cycles rather than calendar years, more frequent use naturally leads to earlier replacement. For ovens, it was a little bit different. The changing role of kitchens in modern homes means that with kitchens transforming from purely functional spaces to social hubs, open concept designs becoming the norm, this has sparked more frequent kitchen renovations, which of course means, in many cases, new appliances. So it's not that they're worn out, they're just being discarded prematurely in many cases. Also playing a role, when products are cheaper to replace, people may be less motivated to repair them, which makes sense as well. Why repair it when I can just get new? But that affects our perception of their reliability. Researchers observed that during the 2007-2008 financial crisis, appliance sales noticeably dropped and repairs went up, suggesting that when money gets tight, people keep their appliances running longer. So all kinds of interesting stuff when you dig into the data here. Consider how your usage patterns, your maintenance habits, and your replacement decisions affect how long the products last that you use. And the next time someone says, well, they don't make them like they used to, you might point out that for many appliances, they actually do, but how we use them has changed in some cases quite dramatically. In other words, instead of saying they don't make them like they used to, we should say we don't use them like we used to. Well, spring marks the beginning of a season that is filled with gatherings and entertaining, whether we're talking about a chic garden party, an intimate sit-down dinner, or even just a fun backyard barbecue with family and friends. There is one universal truth, and that is you gotta have a great dessert as the grand finale. Celebrated pastry chef Eleonora LaHood is here to share her secrets for creating effortless yet dazzling spring treats, along with a couple of recipes for us as well.
Oh, thank you, Chris, for having me. I'm so excited to be talking to you today. So let's dive in. I think we all go through a meal just to have dessert. Would you agree with
me? Sure, absolutely.
So I think it's the time that people, that person that prepared the dessert took, I think it translates at the end, that love that was poured in, the time to prepare a beautiful dessert. When you're having that delicious treat, I think you can really taste the love and the expertise that they put and the time they took to prepare the dessert. So I'm going to share with you some of my secrets today.
Okay.
And these are secrets that have been known by pastry chefs, chefs for a long time, but now we're going to share it with your listeners today.
Some insider information to help you elevate the experience of your next gathering. So you actually have a couple of recipes that look just absolutely scrumptious. What is the secret to perfecting them?
Well, the secret to perfection is the addition, the newest addition to the Domino family, Domino Baker's sugar. So what is Domino Baker's sugar? It's a sugar that's ultra fine granule. It's a very, very fine granulation. So when you're preparing cakes, batters will aerate better, giving you a very soft and silky texture in your cake. And it also increases or boosts volume of your cake. If you're preparing creams or mousses, and other fillings, they will be very silky and creamy and smooth. So that's my secret. But okay, let's start baking. Are you ready, Chris?
Okay, real quickly, I want to just make sure that we clarify here. So it's a fine grain. The baker's sugar is a fine grain, but it's not like a powder, like not like confectioner's sugar, right?
That's a good question. Thank you for asking, Chris. So it's not powder like powdered sugar that we know. It's an ultra fine granule.
Okay.
But it's not powder. Thank you for asking.
All right. Okay. So lay the recipes on us here.
Let's do it. So we're going to prepare today a creme brulee cake, one of my favorites for spring. And as Easter is coming, you're going to love it. So first, you're going to preheat your oven to 350 degrees. And then grease and flour a Mary Ann cake pan.
Okay.
After that, you're going to whisk together the flour, baking powder, and salt just for them to incorporate very well. And then in a bowl, you're going to add your eggs and start beating them at medium-high speed until they begin to foam. And here's where the star of the show comes in, Domino Baker sugar. You're going to add the sugar and vanilla and beat the eggs until they become thick and double in volume.
Okay.
After that, you're going to fold that flour mixture that we have, then put it in your pan and put it in the oven for about 25 minutes. We're going to prepare two more components while the cake's baking.
Okay.
First, we're going to make a simple syrup, Chris. And as the name states, it's very simple. It's just water and sugar. But here's another secret. Because the granulation is so fine, ultra fine, as a matter of fact, your preparation will be cut in time because the granules will dissolve very quickly.
Aha, uh-huh. Okay.
Mm-hmm. You're also going to prepare a delicious cream, the part of the creme brulee, and with Domino Baker sugar as well. And you will be able to taste the difference. Very smooth, very silky cream.
Mm.
So you're going to start assembling your cake. You're going to put syrup all over your cake, simple syrup to keep it moist. That's the reason for the syrup.
Okay.
After that, you're going to put the cream on top, and then you're going to sprinkle some baker's sugar on top, and you're going to, with a kitchen torch, you're going to caramelize that cake. So you're going to have that delicious, crispy, golden brown crust that we all like in creme brulee.
Okay.
And that it is a beautiful, delicious cake that you'll be able to taste the difference.
Man, I tell you, it absolutely, I know people can't see this on the radio, but it looks absolutely scrumptious. And then you also have another recipe.
Yes, we have here with me an almond cake. And as I said, it's unfortunate that they can't see it because this beautiful
trust
cake
me on this.
Great volume. But they can go, your listeners can go to our website, Chris, for the complete recipe for these both of these cakes and other recipes and tips. They can go to dominosugar.com.
Very good.
And they can find our new product, Domino Baker Sugar, at Walmart and Kroger, or any other retailer, or buy it online now.
And again, it really, truly is a game changer. Let me ask you one other thing, because again, obviously you can use it in more than just these recipes that we're talking about. Is this something you can substitute in really any baker's recipe? Is it like a one-for-one with just regular sugar that you would use in any other baking recipe?
Chris, I think you're a baker because you're asking very good questions. And the answer is yes.
Okay. Well, my wife is actually the baker, but I've been around. We've been married long enough that I've picked up on enough stuff to ask.
I can tell. So, yes, again, you can swap it one for one in your recipe.
Very good. Again, celebrated pastry chef Eleonora LaHood with us this morning. Mention again the website where folks can get more information.
Dominosugar.com.
Eleonora, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris. Have a good day.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. Want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, and that is goodmornings.net. We are always on 24/7 on the World Wide Web. You can also connect with us on social media, sign up for our daily email newsletter, and more. Again, goodmornings.net. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.